Blog Talk Radio.
Get up again and smile. Get up again and smile.
Yeah, that's pretty wild. I guess we can get into it. Welcome to our Black News special post-election coverage here of what happened, especially in the Twin Cities, because that's what we're really concerned about is what's going on here in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis, St. Paul, the state of Minnesota, and all this wonderful, beautiful stuff. I don't think we'll have any internet problems today because we're not going to be talking about Ilhan or anything like that, I guess. I don't know. You know, the NSA or someone cut us off. Hey, Miss Mail, how are you doing? We're also broadcasting this on Blog Talk Radio and Facebook live stream. And sometimes that's useful, but I think, Jonathan, I'm going to start using YouTube Live because you have an archive of all your work. The gentleman in back of me, all those videos that you did, you do them on YouTube and then stream them on Facebook, and then you'll always have a record. It works pretty easily. Anyway, this guy in the background, this dude right here, I can't reach him because he's so far in the background, is Anton. I've been corrected on his name, Milton Mew. He came out of somewhere. No one really knows. I guess he's an attorney and a minister and an advice counselor. And there were some people in our community, or in the Black community, I should say, that kind of rallied around him. And I don't know. Did you know who he was?
You know what, Don? I was talking about it earlier this morning about Anton and him losing to Ilhan. And, you know, I've never heard of him. I don't know if he was sent in here. You know, they sometimes say it, but they say sometimes people are, you know, who want to have a political future in Minnesota or want to start their political career. You see people like Jacob Fry. He's from Virginia, Oakton. Oakton, Virginia. People like Nikhil Mallevy-Pounds, California, or Leslie Remen from Washington, D.C. A lot of these people aspire to be political figures in Minnesota because we just actually just don't do shit here.
No, we don't.
And so what happens is we see come in, whether, you know, you can be from a different country, such as Ilhan Omar, and come in and you can just take over the 5th Congressional District.
Yeah. That's wild because here's what I'm thinking, because you hit it right on it, bam, spot on. Like, a lot of home-based Minnesotans don't do anything, really. So what if the people that are coming in from out of town, getting elected to all these positions, and, you know, they're from Virginia, D.C., what if they were like the lowball in those of their hometown? And they say, oh, we can go to Minneapolis and talk real good.
That's exactly, Don. You said I hit it on the nose. Well, you actually hit it on the nose. Yeah. They are in their cities. They there's not much for them to do. They go to Minneapolis. There's sometimes they work within the Democratic Party, the DNC, the Democratic National group of individuals on the circuit send people just like some of the names that I listed into Minneapolis to get these spots. And this is on a greater scale. So we know that when people like Ilhan Omar go from the 5th Congressional District to Washington, D.C., then that's where the big play, you know, there's nothing. And you know, I'm not saying nothing wrong against her, but there hasn't been any change for the 5th Congressional District. We've had a lot of, what we see is we're protesting a lot. We have proficiency rates, one out of every five students in Minneapolis public schools that are black are proficient in reading. It's just these you would think that this was the 1800s, Don.
Oh yeah.
And we're living just amongst all of this. So there's not much change. Antone, he raised tons of money. I couldn't even believe it.
Yeah.
Raised tons of money. The Republicans are really upset because now they're saying, well, she's paying this money. She married a brother. Now she married the consultant. They're taking the money, giving it to him. What in the world is going on, Mason? Why aren't you running? This is what they told me. Why aren't you running? And I'm sitting to myself, I don't want to get in this. Oh, my God.
No. It's a mess right now because even if you have to look, you have to look at what's going on. The Republicans, I hate to say this because the cat running for the GOP, Lacey Johnson, is a cool dude. He's been on this show. But there's not a snowball chance in hell and he wins. When Omar comes out of the gate in a primary with 90,000 votes, okay?
Unbelievable.
90,000 votes in a primary in the 5th Congressional District, there's no more reason for any of them to spend any money, do any parades, go to no town hall meetings or anything.
Well, do you know what Anton finished with?
Yeah, I'm going to find that out. If you'd like to chat for a quick minute and let me just look right
here.
I did have it up here.
That will give us a good idea on the magnitude of where it is for Ilhan Omar and the status quo for the Democratic Party. I think they're going to have an issue right now with Kamala Harris being the VP, and I pray that's our next subject that we're talking about, because we have to talk about Joe Biden and we got to talk about Kamala Harris and the mass incarceration duo. They're known for the mass incarceration, and it's almost honestly hypocritical for us to talk about fighting for justice or fighting for criminal justice reform when we have some of the two greatest people who have worked for white supremacy in locking up black men that we've ever seen. One in California and the other one who wrote the 1994 crime bill and the 1984 mandatory sentencing.
Yep.
The facts are the facts.
You're right.
Did you end up getting that number?
Yeah, I'm right here. Let me just go to the 5th Congressional District here. So if you're looking at this from a numbers thing, and I will put the link to this on our live stream, right under the live stream there, Ilhan Omar comes out with 57.45 or 57.6%, which is 92,633 votes in the 5th Congressional District, compared to the Republican GOP-endorsed candidate who he had 76% of his folks, but that's only 8,700 people.
8,700 people?
Yeah. That's 8,760. There's no way.
Times just by 11.
Yeah, yeah. And Anton Milton Mew had 63,000. I mean, his money was working, but it wasn't organized money. And the people that were behind him are not really behind him. I guess the people that were trying to, like, talk in his ear, you know, that crew, they didn't do very good to help him out at all whatsoever because.
No, and what happened? Oh, and I know you are, and I know you mentioned this briefly. What's really crazy to me, what Minnesota, we really have a weird activist group within Minneapolis. We had them all backing, randomly starting to back Anton. Never seen him before, never been around. They all jumped ship from Ilhan Omar, and then Ilhan Omar won again. So what this shows me is these activists, they're all over the place, Don. It was similar to when we had the black mothers here, Ahmaud Arbery's mother, and
yeah.
Emmett Till's family, and they all went to see Terry Willis. They went to go be with Terry Willis, who was marching for the families, but the families were here, and they were nowhere to be found. And I call them fake activism or fake activists, but they did the same thing with Anton. They totally missed the mark, and that $3 to $5 million that was spent was a waste of money.
Yeah.
And why not give it to somebody who knows the trajectory of the race in this CD5?
Yeah, and you know, Omar's race was very simple because what she did was she bombarded the 5th Congressional District with social media, but also mailers. She went old school on them, okay? The mailers. She, every time you looked up, folks were getting a mailer in their mailbox. So if you mail those to high-density neighborhoods that are not necessarily well off, that's what everyone's seeing, and she counted on the name recognition. Now, I think it's a genius move that she did, and I wish other political candidates would do the same thing, but, you know, it's very interesting. Like I said, Anton Milton Mew had 63,152 votes, and, right. I mean, he was right up there.
But to be beat by 30,000 votes in this district,
yeah.
when there's only really about what's in this district? I don't know what the population that can vote. You have to pull that number up in the fifth district. How many voters are typically voting? I would look at the last race mm-hmm. and to see how many voted the last race, just to give us an idea on the magnitude of the spread.
Well, look at this. At 7 a.m. on updated last. This is updated at. Today's the 12th, at 7:28 p.m., there were 3,421,000 voters. 3 million voters registered.
For the state of Minnesota?
For the state of Minnesota. So there's 3 million folks out there. And you look at these numbers, and I see clearly in these numbers, I can see the candidates that felt they were celebrities. You know, that didn't do much door knocking and went on that mantra that I'm running because of this or I'm running because of that. And you could see their numbers reflect their lack of engagement.
Did you see that for 67A, John Thompson ended up winning the primary?
Yeah. I was just looking at that. Let me go there now. That was the Minnesota State House of Representatives. And
yep.
it's 67A, and I'm cruising down there. I will put this link out shortly.
Yeah, and so for John, you know, we had John on the show. He's been a justice fighter for the state of Minnesota, obviously for St. Paul and definitely in Minneapolis as well. We had him on the show, and
and
when he did talk, and I talked to him, you know, he said, bro, thanks for, you know, on the show and stuff like that. But I was telling him, this is the type of stuff that we have to do as far as giving a narrative that is unbiased, independent, and just, you know, let the candidates tell their side of the story. And, you know, it might help them, it might not. But
yeah.
I think for this candidate, John, it helped him a lot being on Our Black News.
Oh, yeah, it sure did. I mean, he's very happy about it, trust me. Hey, our call the number is 347-426-3904. Again, the number is 347-426-3904. And before we get to the presidential race, it looks like our producers say we have Mr. M from his palatial palace or studio or estate in South Minneapolis. Hey, Mr. M, thanks for calling in. What's your thoughts about all this stuff that went on?
Well, you know, I'm flabbergasted by these numbers. I mean, I'm in the 5th district. Okay, and so how in the world is there 90,000 voters for Ilhan and 60,000 for Mew? Was that what the numbers were?
Yeah, you're right in there, yeah.
Well, there's not that many people in this district. This is a neighborhood, 5th district. I mean, there's only 400,000 people in Minneapolis. So where are all these people coming from?
I was thinking that maybe – do you think there are 100,000 Somali voters that are over 18 years old? Because
no.
if that's the case, she'll walk in every time.
Well, but no, there's not. But there's another thing that really, all of a sudden, I'm walking through the neighborhood or riding my bike or doing my little run whenever I get out there, and I see this little bitty sign, Omar Fateh. I said, what in the world? Who is that? I just saw a little bitty sign and a lawn sign. I'd never heard anything. And then went online, did a little research, and I saw, you know, a young guy looked like he might have just got out of high school or something, you know, and he beats Jeff Hayden by a landslide.
Yeah. The guy, Mr. Alfred Flowers talked about that on his show. He's from Virginia. He's been up here 3 years. He's a Somali immigrant. And he came up here 3 years, and he dusted off Jeff Hayden. But from what Mr. Flowers was saying on his show, it was the DFL that kind of bounced and changed their loyalties. And that's another thing Jonathan and I were talking about earlier. There's a lot of folks that are up here. I think the head of the DFL, is his name Ken something or another? Is from Florida.
It goes round and round here. It goes round and round. Ed Graff comes up here from Alaska somewhere. Ed Graff comes up here and has an online degree. All of our heads of the school, they've had to have PhDs. They're doctors. He has an online master's degree. He comes up here from Alaska, and he gets that job.
Well, you know what? Those two school board directors that didn't win this next time around, the current school board we have, they were the ones who pushed him through for some reason. Because remember, the commissioner of education back then, Brenda Casales, was the heir apparent because she would have whipped Minneapolis into shape. And these sisters kind of hated on her and brought this Ed Graff and put him in above her, and they hired him, and, you know, she went on her way. I think she's in Boston now doing great things. But, you know, right. We got to look. This should be a wake-up call to every black Minnesotan, black American-born Minnesotan, because we're sitting here, you know, Jonathan and I are staying in our lane. Mr. M, you're staying in your lane. But there are folks that are here that aren't really doing much except yakking.
Right.
You know, and it's not helping. What do you think, Em?
How can they land here? I mean, when we have such great history that, Don, you and I used to talk about this for years with Mr. Edwards. We used to go round and round. You know, the people like the Harry Davises, the Van Whites, the Gary Suttos, the Willa Mae Wilsons, the Mr. Van White again, Miss Van over in St. Paul at the MLK Center, Bill Wilson. I mean, we have leaders from our community that led us and helped our neighborhoods and communities. And now, for some reason, we're infiltrated. And I don't want to put anybody down because I don't know their background, and I'm just looking from the outside in. And being here, going on 70 years, and to see this, I can't believe what I'm seeing. I mean, and not only on the national level, but here, it's an abject failure that I'm seeing our city council. This is why all of these things are just complete chaos. Because we don't have the leadership of people that are invested in our communities that are here to raise up the next generations. And it should be a wake-up call. I mean, it's a wake-up call for me. I might even run for something. I'm even getting to the point now where this is getting so ridiculous for these people as Omar Fataz and all. No. I'm almost thinking about putting at least a candidate or getting behind someone from around here to bring us back around to be for our community.
And
I was going to touch on real quick with Ilhan Omar. I was looking at the numbers. So comparative to 2018 in November or in the primary prior in 2018, she had 60,000 votes comparative to the 47,000. So they both increased in that way. What you are seeing is that now what's going to happen is our community, if we don't step up as leaders, other people's agendas from different places come into play within Minnesota, and that's why we cannot get support on trying to fix the problems within Minneapolis. We have to know about Ed Graff. We have to know about these situations. And these people, they come into our city, they don't know jack about anything, and then they come win. They win. They just get money and they win. I don't get it.
I don't get it either now. And when we see the homeless, you know, in this South Minneapolis neighborhood over at Powderhorn, over at King Park, we've never seen anything like this. This has never been. And what it is, we have housing, but these people are coming in from other areas, and they're somehow being able to load up into the Cedar Riversides, into the traditional housing places that we've had where people could get started to move on. But those don't exist because our people here, for some reason, it used to be to get on Section 8, there was years of a wait. And I was a social work supervisor, okay, for 25 years, so I know all about that. And now people are coming in, and they just waltz right in and get Section 8. They just come right in and go right to the head of the line. Why is this? Why
is this? And that's a hard question to unhatch. But hold on, Em, we have another caller. Last 4, 2192. Is this Ms. C.J. Jordan? Hello? Last 4, 2192. Okay, they got me again. I don't know who this is, but they call whenever we're on the air. They definitely call in. I see your number there. I should call you. It's a St. Paul number, but I'm not going to worry about it. I'm not going to trip. It's really interesting, Em, that you should say that, because it's Minnesota, I think, is notorious for thinking that something is better if it's not from Minnesota, as far as a human in leadership or management, especially in social services and education. And it's really, it kind of sets me back a little bit when, you know, there's great people here and they will spend, like MnDOT, for instance. MnDOT had the CEO or someone of that magnitude for Harley-Davidson to come to Minnesota to speak to the staff of MnDOT for this kind of retreat professional development. I spoke like for 15 minutes. I think he walked away with like $25,000. The Urban League has people like Michael Eric Dyson and other folks come in and do their little spiel and their photo ops and fly out of here with $15,000 plus airfare, plus room and board, plus food, fine dining. And it seems to me that we have people that can motivate Black Minnesotans in Minnesota, but we need to have access, like Carl Eller, Alan Page, you know, some of those Viking greats that are sitting around, and Timberwolves folks, Eric what's his name? No, Garnett. Why am I saying Eric?
Kevin.
You know, I don't watch sports. Mr. Edwards used to always tease me because I don't watch any sports. I cannot do it, okay? I just can't do it. I love playing basketball and racquetball and things like that, but you're not going to get me sit down in front of a TV to not even watch a football game. So I'm not missing nothing or anything this season.
Right.
Again, our number is 347-426-3904. We're talking about this election. You know, one thing that kind of like pissed me off a little bit is that the young Somali person took out Raymond Dean, you know, and
Raymond Dean has been here for a long time.
Yep.
Family is well known throughout the Twin Cities metropolitan area, but this shows you the organization of these other communities that have now it's okay sometimes, but we have these other communities that come in and, you know, they're doing their part. And what they're doing their part, it somehow surpasses the Black community, and we have to address why these things are happening and what are all these other groups, and specifically white America, what are they doing different than Black America where we can't get control of our narrative for our own communities and be able to get the adequate things that we need, God. And, you know, hopefully the brothers a Somalian brother who beat or a sister that beat?
I will tell you right now, because I'm actually right. Let me go back to the website here. Let me see. That is, what district is that? You know, right off 47 or something like that for Raymond Dean?
Yeah.
The 5145, crap. I'm sorry, I should have that. Let me go to Google again here. Raymond Dean should be listening so he could just, you know, pop it in so we can know real quick, you know.
Right.
He is 59. Go down to 59B. Let's look what those votes look like for 59B. Alan Shipley, the Republican, got 359 votes.
That's it?
Those are all the Republicans. Yep. Raymond Dean had 3,000. See, this tells me here Raymond Dean should not drop out of the race because he had 3,364, and Esther Abagaje had.
Oh yeah, she won yesterday.
Yeah, she's the one who barely beat Raymond Dean. Raymond Dean, if he stayed in it, he'd probably win in November. You know, if he just say screw the DFL rules and whatever, he'd win. I think he'd win because he'd know what to do now.
Yeah,
what's
I've,
going on?
Hey, I'm not gonna lie to you. I heard Esther. She's good. She got a lot of support around here.
Okay. I haven't heard from her. Maybe we should. You should reach out to her and get her to join us on one of these shows because I would like to talk to all these candidates that won. One thing that's really scary about this, if you go to this, I'm gonna put this link on the page, Jonathan, so you guys know what I'm talking about, right under the live feed, because you should really actually look at this and see what's going on with the candidates in the race. And this is from the Secretary of State. This is not nothing that I blogged and put up there. But if I go to the U.S. Senate races, Minnesota, and I'm looking at the incumbent Republicans in the Senate, they're going to have a rough time in November because they might not be the majority after November. I think it's November 3rd. And I'm seeing some longtime Republican senators, that aren't doing well.
And you know what? I did have some of those concerns as well, looking at it and saying, whoa, it's going to flip. But then I had it to reality, mm-hmm. Don, and understand that within 15 minutes outside of the Minneapolis and St. Paul area, it's all red.
Yeah.
It's all red.
Yeah.
And when it's time to vote, people who are going to vote down ballot Republican, they're going to go down ballot.
Yeah.
They're going to go down ballot Democrat. They're going all the way.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm looking at this too. Jeff Hayden, 8,700 votes. Omar Fethi is 10,623 votes. But that's not a big number. From 8,000 to 10,000 is not that huge. And
so Jeff Hayden lost last night?
Huh?
Jeff Hayden.
Yeah, he lost. He lost the primary to this Omar Fethi. And
wow.
But by just under 2,000 votes. So I'm looking at this. This is where, you can't depend on the DFL. You just got to have to go out and do it. And and I think that if he kept running, there's a chance that more folks might come out because, a lot of people want to get Trump out of there. So they're coming out in November big time and to vote. But I'm also looking at the results here.
Dang. Omar Fester won.
Yeah. Which one? Which district was that? Where you at?
That is 62.
Okay, I'm over here. Yeah.
SD62?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Senate district. She took it to the next level. She spanked the incumbent with a cake batter spatula.
Well, the neighborhoods have changed. The neighborhood has changed. There's really no neighborhoods. They have dispersed people. I mean, here in South Minneapolis, where I've lived forever, I see all kinds of, I'll just say it. I mean, I'm not negative about it. I mean, they ain't going to get me out of my palatial estate, but I see all kinds of white folks jogging, walking their dogs. I mean, all over this neighborhood so the neighborhoods have changed. There is really not a staunch neighborhood, especially you really see it in these primaries. You see how we've been moved around to different areas and how we've been pushed around and gone out to Brooklyn Center, Brooklyn Park, and dispersed all around. And so there's not blocks of voters. We see it in the primary. So I don't know what's going to happen in the general election. I tend to agree with you. I'm thinking that Hayden, with his name recognition and clout, he may be able to, since that was a fairly close race. But still, this is something he should have walked in. I mean, he should have walked.
He beat him by double digits.
Yeah.
Yep.
So I'm looking at this. I'm going like, dang, this is pretty serious. because you have some things going on here. Bobby Joe Champion, the Republican Paul. See, this is what I understand about the Minnesota GOP. Why are you going to run someone against someone like Bobby Joe Champion that you're not going to win? He got the Republican got Paul Anderson received 811 votes. And remember, when you're voting at the primary, you got to vote straight down one. You can't bounce from Republican or Democrat to your mama's cousin or uncle. And so Bobby Joe, 11,201, and Sule Issey, 33-32 was her count, 22% of the vote. And it looked very interesting. But I'm looking up here, and I'm seeing, you know, the Democrats who actually won their primaries, or they didn't have a challenge, like Melissa Lopez Franson. She's a Democrat from Senate District 49. She had 14,000 votes. Oh my goodness, that wasn't bad. I'm going up here. I'm still looking through these things, and I think also that maybe this Senate District 39 with Karen Housley. And I'm like, is she an incumbent? Karen, I think she might be.
I think so, yeah.
Well, her Josiah Hill got 6,959 votes compared to Housley's 3,100. So that might be enough, you know, come election day to flip that seat right there. And I'm going to keep looking here because you got to look at this to kind of digest what's happening.
Right, because it's moving so fast, and as that's happening, did you want to talk about? We should talk about the shelters. Did you hear about the shelter over in North Minneapolis that they're upset about? They didn't talk to no residents, and they're about to create a shelter right over north. And I think that was directly because of the CARES Act as well, right?
Yeah, and see, I know about that because here goes the deal, Jonathan, on that. The city and the people in charge are bypassing groups like the Urban League, which is right over north, not far from where they want to do that, right? And what they're saying is they're sending a message that, hey, you guys don't have any power, you don't have any authority, you don't have anything. So why should we even go with you? You the community, you don't represent the community. This is them talking. It's not me talking.
Right.
I mean, it's me making the noise, but you know what I'm saying. And so you're looking at this and you're going like, wait a minute. Now, normally if you want to put the Urban League had two transitional houses in North Minneapolis that they had to sold off when they were getting down low on funds. And I don't think it would be nothing for them to run it again. But the powers that be, they don't want to give the Urban League any money. You know, they don't want to give them anything to do anything over there. But. If the Urban League was to change presidents, and that president wasn't necessarily a Black American, the Urban League would get swole with money. Okay.
Right.
So I'm sorry about the studio line. The AP wire is ringing, and I don't have time to go over and answer it. You know what I'm saying? So you're gonna hear some noise in the background for a minute.
And as I was reading through the details just shortly ago, that many of the residents. School board member Carrie Jo Felder was talking about it as far as saying that no one was alerted, no one was told about it, even though in one of the, I guess, shelters is going to be one exclusively for battered women. But they're saying that since no one talked to anybody in the city and community, they don't want it. And like you said, a lot of people are going to start bypassing these individuals that have been, you know, in the community for so long, and there hasn't been a lot of change. Even with people like myself, I'm 33 years old. You know,
you're old as hell.
Right, poor kids, right? I got a lot of people who are my age group, the older millennials, who are starting to say, well, what can we do? And we're seeing other groups, like we said, come out of town in different states who say, oh, maybe not the same before Jack Squad, and now let us build our own shelters. Let us put some implement some proposals. Let's do this. And, you know, Minneapolis City Council, they're going to do basically whatever anybody else does. Minnesotans come in, and that's another thing. If I came in there with a proposal, it could have been like saying, I have a plan for reparations for all of the residents for Minneapolis. Everybody gets a check. So Minneapolis residents are all told to do something. And they said, amazing, you can give money to every single Minneapolis resident. The Minneapolis City Council still would do it because they're biased of individuals like myself who they might not like. I don't know if Felipe Cunningham and Jeremiah. I don't think Jeremiah Ellison likes me. But if we come up with proposals, does their bias come into play?
Of course.
Right. And that goes along with everybody else who's trying to do this change for Minneapolis. So when they find other people who come out of state and then they pop up on the state like Anton, they can't wait to work with Anton.
Yeah.
They can't wait to work with these individuals who haven't been in the city. So that's another problem we have in Minnesota from working with our own people who are familiar with the system here.
Yeah. And why don't the urban league, all these people,
network with the Jonathan? Why don't they network with the youth? I mean, they have their names. They've been here. And that's the thing is you have to have another generation to come in and do these things that have the vibrancy, that have the energy, and that see what's going on in the streets. They don't see this. Why don't they bring in the people? Jonathan's organizing people. He's doing things. Why don't they bring in the youth to come in and be part of it so that they can take over as they move on? I mean, that's how this is supposed to work. I just don't get it because that I've seen it work like that. They brought me in. These are the people that brought me up, Stanley King and all the people at Sebastopol and all the community centers and all the things that had summer jobs and sent me to college and sent. Why aren't we doing this? That's what I can't understand. Why is there so much inertia when we have people that want to do it and they beat them down? I have no answer.
There's people that just walk away because you don't have to deal, especially if you have your own business or if you have a full-time job. You don't have time. I cannot go to 20 nonprofit meetings in a day just to talk to watch this power dynamic. And that's all it is. Right. Someone's being in charge. And this is what we're going to do. You know, they're going to get the money.
Yeah.
They're going to get the money.
Right, and they're not going to share it with nobody.
Yeah.
Don, that you hit it on the nose once again. We have so many of these nonprofits, these big groups. I don't even know what they're doing, but they're sitting around. They have the same conversations. They're anti-violence, but the violence increases. It's actually increased by 95%. Those are what the statistics are saying. We have domestic abuse. The police are not even going to calls no more. Minneapolis is literally crumbling at the seams, and they have an issue with working with the residents. You know that, Don. I hate to tell you this, but the problem with the violence in Minneapolis, I could have literally stopped the violence and the murder rate by 75% to 80% myself. Okay, just by having initiatives, having the right organizations, putting the right people in charge.
Yeah.
And what we have a problem with, leadership role from Minnesotans within Minneapolis. The hate is so bad here, and we need to break that stigma of people hating on each other because there's so much money available. And if you're worried about that little ass grant money, and I hate to tell you, if you're worried about the grant money and you're scared about business people, entrepreneurs coming in and then making triple, quadruple what you're making and getting more done, then move out of the way. It's time for you guys to move.
And that's exactly right. And we do have a caller, but before I go to that caller, I want to play this old spiritual.
We shall overcome.
Yeah, we ain't overcoming nothing because we ain't saying nothing. Here we go. Caller 7244, you're live on Our Black News. What's your question, comment, or criticism?
My name is Neve. I'm calling from South Carolina. I think, there have been probably more talks here now going into the election season about mm-hmm. voting more than I've ever heard, right? What I've been hearing, you know, in particular speaking about black folk. And my question was a one, what has been the zenith of our participation, of our overwhelming amount of conversation that we don't use all the time, but we definitely use it around, you know, voting season. What is the zenith? Any one place for black folk as it relates to us voting, us being more politically involved, as it relates to outcomes and resolutions and programs that are affecting black folk. Any year would work, but this is a question that I ask. I oftentimes question myself, and I definitely saw what it looked like in the face of Barack Obama. And a lot of people may insist that, hey, we were doing well, in my opinion. Hey, we were doing just as we're doing now in the face of the orange man, right? So, you know,
I agree with you 100% about, you know, even looking for that zenith, because I don't think with the election of President Obama, that was our zenith. You know, that was, how can I put this calmly? I'm so happy that we had a black president. I'm thrilled. I think it was long overdue, long overdue. But if you look at former President Obama, and you look at Jesse Jackson, and you look at Al Sharpton, and you look at Michael Eric Dyson, and you look at some of these black people, President Obama was a different kind of black person. Okay? Sharpton will never be president. Jesse Jackson, he ran, will never be president. But there was something about Barack Obama that everybody liked. Okay? He was a smooth orator. He could talk. He could walk, he could smile, he could flirt, and people go, they lose their mind. That's great. Plus, he was our president for 8 years. And we did not get a check in those 8 years. You know, not that there was a pandemic happening, but it wasn't our best. It wasn't our zenith. And I think my opinion, I'll let Jonathan answer too. My opinion about our zenith is when we decide to get off our proverbial asses and understand that we control billions of dollars in spending and cash in the bank, and that we have enough people in the United States in every in the top 25 cities to actually run them. Mayor, city council, police chief, agencies, state agencies. And until we take that initiative, because check it out, brother, here, you're down south, we're here up north. Up north, you know, we have a huge Somali population. And from the minute they landed in the Twin Cities, signed off by former Senator Norm Coleman, the minute they landed here, they said, this is the land of opportunity. They didn't sit on their butt. Businesses started open up in neighborhoods where, you know, you like every corner store, there's an Arab descent person or Somali person running the stores, basically. They open up clothing stores, furniture stores, and they understood the art of negotiation. You can't go into Target and say, hey, I want this spatula, but it's $1.99. I'm going to give you $1 for it. They'll have you carried out by security. Well, you can go into a Somali store or Arab store and say, hey, I want one of them white T-shirts, but they're $5. I got three right now. Okay, my brother. And they'll give it to you, okay? And so in that way, it was good. But in the political way, there was a shift because white Minnesota, with their Minnesota Nice, think that if you come from another country, and this, I know this is a really terrible generalization, but I'm going to have to make it because it's true. You come from another country, speak another language, you got to be better than the black folks we got in our backyard. And you've seen this uneven promotion of these folks. And you see the pushback of the black American or the black Minnesotan born in Minnesota, like Jonathan and I. You know, we're toxic, basically, because we're sitting here telling you what's going on the way we see it. We're not formatted. We're not getting any of that COVID-19 money that the black newspapers here in this town got and some other black folks got to do some BS Facebook Live stuff every day. You know, we didn't get that because we're not going to be segregated, you know, by a system of white supremacy that wants us to do this one way. I'm not doing that. Never. It's not going to happen. So I don't know if that answers your AM. All right. Well, let me, Jonathan, what do you think? And then we're going to pass it to M.
All right. Well, you touched on so many great points. And when Norm Coleman did make that decision to have, you know, Minnesota's always been a refuge state. You know, we've let the Bosnians come in, the Vietnamese. We had the Liberians come in. We had the Somalians come in. And so we have all of these different cultures right now battling against basically the system of white supremacy, like you said. But now the system of white supremacy still has its sights on African American black men. And not only that, the black race all together. So if we're not willing to subjugate ourselves or sell out, I would say, we're going to miss these opportunities of no opportunities. And we have to create our own. And so when we're talking about, you know, I've been marching around, and this summer, you know, I told him I marched more than anybody, I think, on the planet right now. and I truly got to a spot where now it's the next stage, John. It's economic justice. What does economic justice look like? What does reparations look like? What do these things look like? And I know some people are laughing, but maybe what does restitution look like? These conversations are hard to have. If I want to touch on one more thing.
Go ahead.
When we had Obama is completely different than what I would do. The first damn day, Don, I would did an executive order. I would have been sworn in on January 20th, and I would have brought everybody to the White House. It would have been a breaking news story, 7 o'clock, everybody tune in, and it would have been, we're signing an executive order for blacks to get reparations the first damn day, okay? And what we've seen is he didn't attack Chicago violence. He had a certain agenda that he followed Joe Biden, and now Joe Biden is the president like they wanted him to be. And we have Kamala Harris, who has a horrible record. So the black community has another 4 to 8 years for sure on the back burner.
Yeah, and don't be talking about no Kamala Harris, okay? That's not what. No.
Okay.
Hey, we just had a message from. And just give me a minute, Em. I'm gonna pass it to you for the caller also, but I just want to get this out real here. Miss CJ Jordan just sent me a picture. One of her friends, a friend of hers, was outside his home near Loring Park, and next to downtown Minneapolis, and heard the sound of several gunshots, and one struck him in his head. It didn't kill him, but the picture's on my Facebook page. You can see where it went, whoo, right in his head. And the blood and everything. I'll tell you guys.
And this is what we're dealing with.
Yeah.
It's a war zone in Minneapolis. We've been talking about the gun violence. We've been talking about ways to stop it. And that's why it's vital when we have this breaking news on Our Black News coming in regularly like this. We are able to get this message out. And this is why funding and stuff like this is so vital for us as a black news outlet, and especially being on Blog Talk Radio and stuff like this. And we're giving out information that needs to be had.
Hey, let's get Em in here real quick, because the gentleman from down south is asking about, you know, is this our zenith? You know, is this, you know, our word? How do we get to it? Em, do you have any comments?
Well, I just
man,
you, I mean, Jonathan, you know, you ran it down. Like, this is the country. People come to this country. I mean, that's the history of this country. But, you know, my statement will continue to be, you come here, you need to get in line. Okay? You don't come in here. And so, but we, as the African Americans, the blacks that have been here, we need to make sure we step up and claim our spot in this. You know, we have to get our foothold here, and we're not pooling together. We're not pooling our monies together. There's so many things we can do. Like we're just talking about doing the nonprofit program or putting up a shelter or putting something up over north. We're fully capable of doing that. We have judges. We have attorneys. We have people that can put together the most beautiful proposals and put programs together to do these things for ourselves. And that's what we used to do. And we need to follow and watch that blueprint. I mean, yeah, people kind of went to sleep, I think, when we had Obama. They said, oh, it's great, black president. And they say, see, they point that up at us. See, look what how great this is. It's, yeah, but that was 8 years of pretty much just a moderate type of a thing. It didn't move ahead like in the 60s when we were in the streets and everybody went to college. Everybody got jobs at corporations, and everybody realized that we've got to really do something. And I still feel we need another wake-up call, and hopefully this is it now. But we have to take our place.
We appreciate you calling, caller, from down south. Call again. We're on usually Saturday mornings at 9:30, but this was a special program. And make sure you subscribe and follow. Thanks for the call.
If I could, real briefly.
Go ahead.
Just add on to what you guys are saying, because basically, you know, obviously we still at a place of disappointment here in 2020. And as the last brother was speaking, we have definitely been the one whose backs this country was built upon, right? And we're talking about even under Obama, the Jews had received reparations, you understand, for something that happened in, you know, a whole different country, a continent. But the reality is that us as black folk, us as Africans here in America, we still are dealing with the same trauma. And it is very important for us to go back and see where we're giving our power to. Dr. Claude Anderson said we spend the most money. We're the biggest spenders. And our money doesn't stay in our own community, you know, a little to no time. And I think it's very important for us to understand where we are, whether that be the football, the basketball, whether it be the BET Awards, all this stuff that we put our attention and we put our money into. And at the end of the day, they really serve us no purpose, even here in 2020. So I think it definitely takes us to put our thinking caps on and do some reevaluating, because I don't think just going to the polls are going to is going to actually get us out of this situation. It's got to be some collective working together that we're going to have to do inside our own families, inside our own communities, in my opinion.
You're absolutely right. We agree with you. We concur. And thank you for calling. We hope to hear from you again. Appreciate it. It's a real uphill battle. And in the last so few minutes that we have here, we're done at 8:30 today. We got to talk about the lady behind me.
And we got to talk about the people behind me as well.
Yeah, Kamala Harris.
And let me help you with that. It's like the word comma and then la. So
Kamala.
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 Kamala. Okay.
Kamala.
So, yeah, I thought in the very beginning, once I heard her talk, I don't care if you're – see, the problem is we're too fractured. We're either Democrat, Republican. Democrat, Republican,
right.
And every time I heard this woman open her mouth, no, Michael Wallace, I don't not have a crush on her. He just wrote that on the page. But if I do, it's my business, and I don't care who knows. But
nocturnal.
She was to the point. She was blunt. She wiped up Joe Biden in several debates real well and everybody around. And I'm like, why wouldn't she be the vice president? Because if this works out for her, there's no telling, because Trump...
She could be a president.
She could be a president in a heartbeat, you know? And then she won't get Hillary Clinton. She'll bring one of them other sisters up under her, you know, and do some historical stuff.
Stacey Abrams. She'll bring Stacey Abrams up under her.
I would hope that she'd bring maybe even Cory Booker. Her and Cory Booker would be the bomb biggity, okay? Because then I'd have to tell the Republicans, see you. Okay, and I'm getting pretty close to that now, because I'm just about done with some stuff they've been doing lately. And not that I'm going to be a Democrat, but I'm going to vote for people that I think are on the agenda that I'm on, you know?
Right.
If I can get
some
questions.
Some might be Republican, some might be Democrat,
yeah.
Might be independent,
yeah.
Green Party.
Yeah, so I mean, libertarians, too. Libertarians have some great talking points. And
right.
I agree with a lot of them till they start moving to their weapons and stuff. You know, I'm like,
right.
I'm gonna
you know, and Rand Paul and, you know, the Rand Pauls and
yeah.
But no, I know you mentioned the picture behind you of Kamala Harris.
Kamala.
And behind me is a picture, if you can see it.
Yeah, yeah.
It was the day of the 1994 crime bill of Bill Clinton and Joe Biden. And so when we're having these conversations about the presidential elections and the candidates, and we're given historical pieces on mm-hmm. what happened and I want to say it, Kamala Harris, her background, you know, we know how she got to the top. and,
by being on the top.
Hey.
Touche.
But I really think that there are going to be conversations around that with Donald Trump. You know, he's a loose cannon. He will just let it out. And I'm telling you this right now, John, before it all starts, when the presidential election debates go on, Donald Trump, you better hope it's virtual. They better do a virtual reality. That's why they're probably doing the virtual stuff with the COVID, because they know that the presidential debate is going to be the worst of all mankind. And Donald Trump is going to take Biden apart.
Yeah.
And they don't have a chance. When the moment Donald Trump, this is a mark my words, this is what he's going to say. Donald Trump's going to say, I've done more for the black community than both. And the moment he says that, it's going to start just a firestorm, a whirlwind.
Yeah, but see, on the other hand, we know that Donald Trump is going to eat up Ozzy Osbourne. I mean, Joe Biden, sorry.
Right.
But on the other hand, you got
Pence
going against Senator Harris. She going to eat him up. It's a done deal. He's going to be, oh, mommy, okay?
Oh, I know.
She's going to take out the belt and spank him everywhere. And that's good.
Right. Does he play hardball with her? And you know how they feel about black women leading.
Yeah.
They hate it.
Yeah.
So what is happening? Does he go play low ball and start coming at her prosecutor record? What are they going to do?
That's the only thing he can do, because he can't out finesse her. He can't out speak her. I mean, I was listening to him, a bunch of his tapes. I was listening to some of her stuff on YouTube. I was listening to Trump stuff. It's hilarious. And I'm like, there's no way that Pence can mess with Harris. There's no way. The intellectual, the properties aren't there. You know, for Pence to even get on stage and sell him, it'd be better off if Trump would get rid of Pence and make Harris his vice president. That would be cool.
Oh, my God.
That would be cool. Okay?
That's a whole nother subject.
Yeah, that's a whole different thing. But, I mean, come on. You need a bulldog at the top. You need bulldogs in these offices. Unfortunately, in Minnesota, we don't have that. We got a bunch of passive, you know, Minnesota nice, don't do much, kids are failing. And that's another thing, Jonathan, I was going to talk about real quickly here. We got like a minute before we close out, but we need to have some major internet hubs in Minneapolis and in St. Paul. Hey, there goes the boy Pence. There goes the matchup right there. Yeah, right there, the matchup. Yep. Senator Harris is going to clean his clock. I hate to say it, but that's what's going to happen.
We'll see.
Yeah, and so with that said, any last words to anybody? Because we're getting ready to shut this down.
Well, this was a well-needed episode. We really talked about the trajectory of the political landscape in Minnesota. We have more to talk to see when the general election comes, but we needed to have a special session about what happened with the primary and what it's going to be looking like for the future.
Okay, and I want to let everybody know, Jonathan, I know this is the first you're hearing of it. This Saturday, I am doing a major, major test. and I'll have to study starting tomorrow until Saturday, so I'm probably not going to be available to do the show. But if you'd like to do a Facebook Live, Our Black News, for whatever, I mean, go right ahead. But we'll talk about that when we get to it.
Yeah,
the regular 9:30 program on Blog Talk Radio, this is kind of replacing it because I really need to get this done. And I'll explain it to you later, Jonathan, but it's an important piece and it's going to help a lot of people. And I need to go do what I need to do to make this happen. And it's the only way that I can make it happen. It will be the first time in a very long time that I haven't done a show on Saturday, but it's necessary. And with that said, we'd like to thank Mr. M from his palatial state in South Minneapolis for kicking it with us. And I want to play, this is like Black Minnesotans' top five hit. Let's roll.
We shall overcome. We shall overcome. We shall overcome someday. Oh, deep in my heart,
I do believe
we shall overcome.
We shall.
Let's do it right.
Overcome.
Let's just do it right now. This is it. Thanks for listening. And stay back.